Hola, ¿ya estás pensando en cómo aplicar lo aprendido? Si es así, esto va a interesarte. En Dare to Learn nos especializamos en ayudar a otros a desarrollar habilidades y capacidades críticas para el futuro del trabajo. Nuestros cursos te habilitan en tres principales áreas: agilidad de aprendizaje, productividad y liderazgo. Te invitamos a visitar daretolearn.com.mx para que conozcas todos los cursos que tenemos para ti en estas áreas y que estamos seguros te van a ayudar a reinventarte y prepararte para ese futuro que ya es presente. Además, si estás en una empresa, date una vuelta a conocer lo que podemos hacer por tu organización. Más de 10 años y decenas de clientes nos avalan como el hub número uno de aprendizaje organizacional en América Latina. Como agradecimiento por ser parte de la comunidad Learning Explorers, Dare to Learn te regala un 30% de descuento en el curso Time Ownership en línea. Solo ingresa D2L Podcast, todo con mayúsculas, en la página del curso de Time Ownership y obtendrás este beneficio del 30% de descuento exclusivo para nuestra comunidad. Atrévete a ser dueño de tu tiempo, atrévete a aprender.
For me personally, it's not true for everyone, but for me personally, if I don't know why I'm learning something, if it's not tied to some kind of purpose, my ability to learn is severely compromised, much more so than I think for most people, which then created a drive in me to find my purpose that was stronger than it is for most people because I was suffering without it.
Dare to Learn es un podcast para los apasionados del aprendizaje. Cada semana platico con expertos y líderes de estas áreas para conocer sus estrategias, pero sobre todo sus tácticas para hacer frente a los retos del presente y para desarrollar a las organizaciones del futuro. Mi compromiso es compartirte estas tácticas y darte tips sobre cómo ponerlas en práctica mañana mismo y evitar así que seas desplazado por el futuro y las nuevas tendencias. Quiero que puedas hacerle frente y prepararte de la mejor manera para ese posible futuro que ya es presente.
Esto es Dare to Learn.
Hola, ¿qué tal? Bienvenidos a un episodio más del podcast de Dare to Learn. Hoy tengo un invitado muy especial llamado Tim Kelly. A Tim Kelly lo conocí a través de Brian Robertson, otro de nuestros invitados y creador de la metodología Holacracy. Y Brian me decía, tienes que hablar con Tim porque te va a volar la cabeza. Y así fue. Tim nos voló la cabeza hablando del tema de propósito, de cómo encontrarlo a nivel personal y cómo llevarlo a las organizaciones. Tim se ha dedicado a capacitar a más de 1,000 consultores, terapeutas, entrenadores y líderes de equipos en justamente eso, encontrar su verdadero propósito, que es el nombre de su libro Bestseller True Purpose. Tim ha trabajado con Alibaba, Nabisco, PricewaterhouseCoopers, you name it, ¿no? Y en ese sentido, es un experto en sistemas de autoorganización y que la gente a través de esos sistemas encuentre un propósito superior y que las empresas también lo hagan. Es un retirado de la Reserva Naval de Estados Unidos, tiene una licenciatura en matemáticas nada más y nada menos que por el MIT y en este episodio nos comparte muchísimos hacks de aprendizaje, claro, pero también de cómo encontrar el propósito de vida personal, de empresas, de equipos, como ya les dije, y también cómo conectar el tema del aprendizaje con nuestro propósito. Espero que disfrutes este episodio tanto como yo y como siempre te veo del otro lado del aprendizaje. Dare to Learn.
Hey, hello everyone. Good to have you here once again in one episode of the Dare to Learn podcast. And this is a very special episode because I'm interviewing Tim Kelly from Berkeley, California, in the sunny Berkeley, California. And also we are here in the sunny Monterrey. And I'm very glad that we are having this conversation, Tim, because I was in an impasse because my baby born was born. And now I'm very glad to actually, you are my first interviewee after a couple of months. So I'm very glad that we are doing this and taking back again the interview with great people, learners, and leaders. So, Tim, thank you very much for being here.
And congratulations on the kid. I can remember the sleep deprivation and we have some great pictures of the kid all like happy and me and my wife like.
Exactly. You got it. You got it perfectly right. And I am. That's kind of the best way to define masochism, right? So yes, and of course it's also a great learning journey once again, even though it's my third child. Every one of them has been a journey and adventure I'm pretty happy to have in my life. So you were introduced to me by Ryan Robertson, and it was just I have a phrase that I love that is from DedX Sievers that says, if you trust the source, you don't need the argument. So as soon as Brian said you should interview Tim, for me it was a no-brainer to do it. So I'm pretty sure that we're going to have a great conversation, insightful conversation with you.
And no doubt.
I'm going to start with a question I ask everyone in the podcast. That is, as you and I were talking before the actually starting the recording of this, it's all about learning, a lot about learning. So what is something about learning, Tim, that you think or that you believe it's very clear to you, and sometimes you struggle to see why it's not clear to other people?
Yeah. I was fortunate when I was learning to teach and conduct workshops and consciousness work and help people self-reflect and learn about themselves and how they tick, to work for some very experienced trainers. And the thing that this one woman, Carol Kamen, taught me that I've found immensely useful is about context, that people need context in order to learn. And they have to understand not only what they're going to learn, there's that tell them what you're going to tell them, right? Tell them what you're going to teach them first and then tell them what you taught them after, right? That thing. But not only what you're going to tell them, but why you're going to tell it to them and how you're going to teach them. So the what, the why, and the how before beginning to teach something. And that doing a good job of that creates like a landing pad for the learning to arrive and land and take root. And I notice myself sometimes sitting there in a situation where I'm a student or a listener, and the other person starts talking to me, and in some ways it feels like at me, and they haven't told me that. They haven't explained to me what we're going to do or why we're going to do it or how we're going to do it. And I can just feel those unanswered questions interfering in my ability to absorb what's coming. So that's been immensely useful. And she would just interrupt me and make me do it over if I didn't set the context correctly.
That's great.
Until it was burned into my brain. The other thing which I realized much earlier is that there's a very big difference between understanding something and being able to get somebody else to understand that same thing. And what most people tend to do is talk about something they understand to someone else as if that other person already understood it. And it's actually very difficult. It's kind of a mental gymnastics exercise to remember what it was like not to understand that thing and then explain it in a way that makes sense to someone who has no idea what you're talking about. And that's a real, those both of those are real skills that I've worked hard to develop, so that people can understand me when I'm trying to explain something to them or teach them something or help them transform in some way.
I love it. I love it. And I have a couple of remarks to do, if you allow me. One of them is I like to start, I really love to start my interventions, my learning interventions with a story. But I have learned to say, to be very clear, like, I'm going to tell you a story before we begin. Right. Just so that for people to be, not to be anxious, to say, oh, right. So what's happening?
What's he doing? What's he talking about?
Why exactly. and that small, remark will make a lot of the difference between how people actually react to the story, right? Okay, so this is a story, not a training. But when I don't do that, they have that interference in their
right. Heads. I would suggest adding to that. And the reason I'm going to tell you this story is there's the why.
Yeah, agreed. I love it. And the second of them, I love the mental models thing and the biases thing. And I suffer from what you just described about, I think it's the expertise bias or something.
Right.
Like, you are so. And the best way I have seen it expressed is your arithmetic teacher or your math teacher that why don't you understand this is so easy? Because they cannot see how your
it's easy
brain
for
is
you.
Not wired. It's so logical to them that they cannot understand how your brain is not wired as
and theirs. Then they can't explain it. This is the key.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
If you cannot understand what it's like not to understand it, you can't explain it.
Wow, we need to quote that. To understand what is that, not to understand it, to go back to when who you were before you understand it. It's very hard. Very hard. Yeah. That's why it's important.
It's something you've really devoted a lot of your life to understanding, then it's very hard to remember what it's like not to understand it.
Yeah. We can talk about how to get into that state of mind. Maybe let's keep that as a as a thing on the side, the sidelines, that maybe we naturally will get to there, or if not, maybe we can just take it back once.
I'll warn you, I don't know that I have a good answer for that question.
All right. No problem then. Let's see if it comes out naturally in the rest of the question. So can you tell us briefly about yourself in the short version of your story, talking about stories? Sure. And if you can relate your own story to learning milestones, to these kind of moments of truth that were insight moments or learning moments.
Yeah. I think the milestone I want to call out, and it's very much on my mind because my son's 18 and he's just finished his freshman year of college. When I went to MIT and originally was studying computer science and electrical engineering, getting into MIT had been my goal. And so when I got there, I really didn't have any goals, which was a bit of a problem for me. And the lack of goals interfered with my learning. The way I would say it now, looking back, is I would say the lack of purpose or the lack of meaning interfered with my learning, which unintentionally, this is going to tie back beautifully to what we were talking about just a minute ago. I didn't realize this till now, but I didn't know why I was learning what I was learning. And that cost me a lot of motivation. I did actually set a goal for myself, which was to be an astronaut, and then studied the things that would support that goal. But I didn't really like the stuff I was studying. And so I really hit the wall. I had a lot of drive that, so it took a couple of years for me to wear myself down. But by the time I was a junior, I was just about useless. I couldn't get myself to study or go to class or do homework or do anything. It was awful. And I realized I was having a crisis of meaning, and I was trying to find sources of meaning. So I took
How old were you?
Class. I was 21, something like that. So I took a philosophy class. I started visiting the Zen Center down the street. Took a Bible class. Just kind of groping to see what might scratch that itch, and nothing really did. And I wound up flunking out of school and getting recalled to the Navy to swab decks and scrape paint because I had been in an officer training program. So they were like, okay, well, if you're not going to be an officer, we'll send you over here to clean this.
interesting switch.
It was a very stark transition from being a junior at MIT to swabbing decks and scraping.
Wow, definitely, yes.
Which was a useful wake-up call. But the key there was that for me personally, it's not true for everyone, but for me personally, if I don't know why I'm learning something, if it's not tied to some kind of purpose, my ability to learn is severely compromised, much more so than I think for most people, which then created a drive in me to find my purpose that was stronger than it is for most people because I was suffering without it. And the same thing happened in my career at Oracle, where I eventually realized that climbing the corporate ladder wasn't enough of a why, and that getting higher wasn't going to make me happier. And then I lost all my motivation again, right? It happened again. So I think, the moment in that case, the moment was meeting with this. I was working for a senior vice president. I'd gotten very high up. I was working for Larry Ellison, and he did not look happy to me. He came rushing into this meeting late. He'd had to reschedule it, I don't know, 6 or 10 times or something. And he's like, okay, what are we talking about? And this is the guy who's supposed to be managing me. And he's like, you know, completely unprepared and hoping that I have an idea of what we're supposed to talk about. And my thought was, I don't want to be you. Like, if going up another level on the ladder turns me into you, I'm not interested.
Wow.
And I hadn't had any better why than that. That's a fairly traditional work why. I want to, you know, get more prestige and money and blah, blah, blah. And so that was in my early 30s, which for that time was young to have that kind of realization.
Yes.
For now, that's not uncommon for 20-year-olds to have that thought and say, well, wait a minute. I'm not interested in all this traditional money and prestige and working, then retiring. None of that is appealing to me. I'm going to have to chart some other path. That's fairly common now. It wasn't then. And then the next milestone, I eventually left Oracle Corporation to go work for this workshop company where I told you I learned from this woman about context and how to teach and stuff like that, and about the mind, the psyche, how the, you know, psychologically how people function and work internally and the unconscious and all sorts of interesting stuff. But I went and took that job, which was paid way less because it was more fulfilling. And it was out of that work that I eventually found my purpose and wrote the book True Purpose and became a purpose expert and flying around the world and all this other stuff. But it wasn't like, I'm going to go find my purpose and write a book. It was, I'm miserable because I don't know my purpose. That was what drove the whole thing.
That's great. That's great. That's a great way to put it. Thank you. Because of course, the introduction I just did about your bio doesn't tell this story. And it's also, I think, comforting for a lot of people out there, me, myself included, that we struggle with purpose because we think it's something that it's easy to find. It is not. It is something that you have to own. You have to do the work, right? To do the work to get it. So,
Some people find it accidentally. Some people know it when they're 4 or 5 or 6 and it never changes. But those people are very rare. For most of us, it's a real project to answer that question.
It's actually a perfect segue to the question about how do you define purpose? Especially you talk about higher purpose. You wrote a book about it. You help leaders in organizations and probably or individuals to find it. So it's a compounded question, or not compounded, a double side question about what it is and why it is important for organizations.
Yeah. So the way I define it, and I'm sometimes, you know, I'm going to go back to the first question thing. Some things people don't understand about learning. People are terrible at defining stuff. I've discovered this, and it's my math background. It's like, I know what a good definition looks like. And I was a theoretical
An equation.
Right. Before in theoretical math, not necessarily in applied math, but in theoretical math, you define everything before you do anything with it, right? If you haven't defined it, you can't use it. You can't touch it. And I've been to workshops for people about purpose or vision or something where the person will talk about it for half an hour and never offer a definition of the term. And I'm always the one who raises my hand and says, excuse me, you've said purpose about 100 times. What do you mean when you say that? Just so we're clear. And they can't do it. They can't define it. And so anyway, so now I've set a high bar for myself.
No. It's a good. All right.
but it's another learning thing, right?
Yes.
Right? If you want to learn about something, having a definition of it is very useful. And a definition is not a description. So the definition I use for purpose is the answer to the question why. Is purpose. And I think that definition works great. It works great on a small scale. It works great on a large scale. So we might ask the question, why are we doing this podcast? And your answer would be different than my answer because your purpose in doing this podcast is different than my purpose in doing this podcast. We could ask the listener, why are you listening to this podcast? Well, your purpose is going to be different from another listener for this podcast, right? And this is not a life-altering, world-changing purpose, right? This is a small purpose. Like, why did you buy a car? What was your purpose in buying that car? That's a perfectly legitimate definition that works in all settings, right? Now, if we're talking about someone's life purpose or the purpose of an organization, now we're asking the question, why do you exist? Right? Why are you here? Why are you alive? But you don't have to answer that question. You can just say, well, who cares? I am. So I'm going to go do this. That's fine. Or there might be value in answering the question, particularly if you don't feel like you have enough meaning or fulfillment in your life, or if you would like to have a greater impact in your life, then answering the question, why are you here, could be very helpful with that. Organizations, now nonprofits answer this question. If you ask a nonprofit, why are you here? They know right away, we're here to save the whales. We're here to feed the starving children, right? We're here to reverse climate change. They're right on that. But if you ask a for-profit company why they're here, they'll say some version of, we're here to make money or make tires or offer legal services to our customers or something like that. Those aren't actually answering that question. They're answering the question, what do you do? Which is not the same as the question, why are you here? For-profit companies, generally speaking, do a horrible job of answering this question. And even an answer which economically makes sense is, well, we're here to make money for our owners or our shareholders or whatever, is actually in practice a terrible answer. And this gets into why purpose is important, which is if you don't answer this question well, it may or may not hurt you. It did actually hurt me, but it may or may not hurt you not to answer the question well, but it's a huge missed opportunity. In the case of an individual, it's the opportunity to lead a fulfilling and meaningful life, which the research says will make you live longer and be happier and healthier and earn more money,
wealthier,
be less
exactly.
likely to get Alzheimer's disease, less likely to get cancer and heart disease, and have better sex. They've done research to prove a correlation with all of those things, right? So it's purpose is practically a miracle drug. If you look at the effects it has, if someone lives a purposeful, meaningful, fulfilling life, it changes everything. For an organization, if they have a real higher purpose, where they're actually, and I'm talking about a for-profit company, trying to make the world a better place in some specific, tangible way, and that they measure their success by whether they're improving the planet in some specific way, then their employees will be more engaged. There'll be less absenteeism at work, fewer workplace accidents, less healthcare costs. The employees will be happy about the company and brag about it to other people. Their customers will be less likely to shift to another brand, even if the other brand offers them the same product or service for less money. There's a huge long list of benefits that organizations get if they're operating according to a higher purpose, many of which are financial. So ironically, if you're trying to earn money as your primary goal, you will earn less money than if you're trying to fulfill a higher purpose in a profitable way.
That's it's overwhelmingly good to hear, right?
Like, yeah.
All the benefits of it. So it's great. And I think, well, it is important to organizations because organizations are full of people, right? So if you have fulfilled people, it's almost like a result to have a successful organization, apparently. But anyway,
here's what I love to say to an audience of CEOs, right? So I've got 100 CEOs sitting in a room and doing public speaking, and they're talking about, well, Tim, why does this purpose thing matter? And I say, okay, let's take Milton Friedman at his word and say that the purpose of any business is to generate value for its shareholders, right? Now, question to you CEOs, today, this morning on planet Earth, how many people do you believe, total number, woke up early and rushed to work because they were excited about creating value for shareholders? Round numbers.
Yeah, good one.
The answer I most often get is zero, not 0%. Zero total human beings out of 7.5 billion or whatever up to now jumped out of bed early and rushed to work because they were excited about creating value for shareholders. I'm like, okay, great. Then that purpose is a train wreck. It's completely useless. But what if my company were, you know, healing children who couldn't walk or something like that? Might someone jump out of bed and rush to work early because they were excited? Yeah, that could happen. Now we're dealing with a number greater than zero, right? Do you want your employees and your customers to care about whether your company succeeds or not? Yes or no? And if you say we're here to make money, they won't.
Yeah, agreed. It's interesting because it's been so trendy lately, let's say. It's been so in the mouth of everyone, but it's not clear. I don't see it clearly as trendy, the actions of everyone. So I think it's hard.
Well, it's because it's hard to do, right? There's a lot of companies that would love to do it, and they have not been able to figure out a compelling, inspiring purpose.
Let's jump into that. Like what is the roadmap? What are the steps? Of course, in a very summarized way.
Sure.
How can anyone, an individual,
and individual find their own purpose, organization find its purpose, same methods.
Exactly.
The issue is, it's what you said earlier, which is that people believe that they should know how to do it. Now, if I hand somebody a violin who's never picked up a violin and say, play a beautiful sonata, they're going to laugh because they know they can't, right? If the pilot and co-pilot in a plane die and I go back in the plane, I say, you, come fly the plane. They're going to go, no, I don't know how to fly a jet. Don't call on me, right? People know they don't know how to do that. But somehow they think they're supposed to know how to find their purpose. And I'm like, you don't. Right? That's another technical project, just like any of these other things, where if you know how to do it, then it's easy. And if you don't, it's impossible. So why would you hold yourself to that? Why would you beat yourself up for not doing that when you wouldn't do it for the violin or the jet plane?
I'm smiling because that's exactly the same thesis or the same argument with personal finance, you know?
Right.
Right. Everybody thinks they know about money.
You don't come out of the womb knowing how to balance a checkbook or invest for retirement. Like,
but
that's
apparently
not how
you
works.
Have to.
And, right. What you do, you have to, but exactly. But don't expect that you automatically know how, right?
Exactly. We are expected to know for whatever reason that nobody teaches us, but you have to know. And I completely agree on this, that we don't recognize that these kind of things require method and technique. So
that's right.
What would you tell us a little bit about
that. So there are people and organizations that find their purpose basically by accident. They just wake up one morning knowing what it is. There are some children who seem to know from birth, you know, and they're just, I'm here to do blah blah blah. They tell their dad when they're four, you know. But that's like way less than 1% of the population. Then there's also a bunch of people who are leading happy, meaningful, fulfilling lives and don't need to know their purpose, and they don't care, in which case we don't need to worry about them either, right? But for the rest of us, what most people do is they just sort of ask the question over and over again, and they get frustrated that they don't know the answer, which is not a method, right? And organizations do the same thing. They'll like get in the boardroom with a whiteboard and a marker and say, okay, let's come up with a purpose statement. And 3 days later, they've got some really crappy statement. They're looking at it going, geez, we just spent 3 days and this is what we came up with. You know, happens all the time. So there's roughly two different sets of methods for doing this. And they apply to different people and organizations. So the one I like to call indirect methods, and these are the most common methods. And this is where instead of asking a person or an organization, what's your purpose, you ask a bunch of sort of purpose-related questions. So for an individual, it would be like, what would you do if you won the lottery, right? What would you do if you had a year to live? What are the three most fulfilling times you can remember in your life, right? These kinds of questions, which get at purpose without asking it directly. Right. And what you're effectively asking the person is, what things have happened or what things do you imagine could happen that would provide the most meaning and fulfillment for you? You're just asking the question in a bunch of different ways, if that makes sense. And then what you do is you take all the answers and you start sifting through it, looking for patterns, like maybe all the answers involve children or the environment right? Or helping people learn in your case, right? So there's this kind of thing. So you say, oh, well, look, there's a pattern in here. Maybe that has something to do with your purpose, right? And you can do the same thing with an organization. The questions are slightly different, but the method's basically the same. So that's one way. That's how most purpose statements get created. When someone says, oh, I know my purpose is to teach, or my purpose is to leave the world a better place than I found it, or my purpose is to inspire people, or something like that, or an organization saying, you know, like Johnson & Johnson, our purpose is to improve the lives of consumers, or Disney to make people happy, or something, some really short kind of sentence fragment like that, that usually means they found it that way. Okay. The other deeper way of going about it that's trickier but yields longer and more inspiring results are called direct methods. And in this case, we're trying to engage the right brain rather than the left brain. We're trying to get at the intuition and the unconscious. And so we're not actually asking the person anything. We're getting them to ask something else inside themselves what the purpose is, right? So the theory here is that, well, if I have a purpose and I don't know what it is, that means it's unconscious. Okay, let's go looking in the unconscious. Let me ask about my purpose and before I go to sleep and see if I have a dream. Let me try meditating. Let me try journaling. Let me try something where I'm not providing the answer, I'm asking the question, and I'm trying to get something else from my unconscious to answer it, right? Or for a religious person, you know, they're praying or whatever, trying to get something else to answer the question. Okay. And so it's possible to create conditions where that has about a 90% chance of success. But people don't know how to do that. So when they do it, it doesn't work and they get frustrated.
Yeah, it looks like common sense to ask you these questions, which is not, right? I mean, maybe if I can double click on that part of how to create the circumstances or the environment to actually be successful. Is it something that you need someone external to create that environment, or how is that?
Usually, it doesn't have to be, but it's hard. It's difficult for people to kind of be their own surgeon, you know? So the conditions are these. One is you have to be relaxed about it. You have to be in a state of calm and curiosity about it. And that's actually more difficult than you would imagine. Because most people, when they say, wow, I'd really like to know my purpose, if you then picked up an envelope and handed it to them and said, here it is, right? There's a good chance they wouldn't open the envelope. They'd get nervous and they wouldn't want to see. Well, why is that? Because people both desire to know their purpose and they fear knowing it. They have imaginations of things that might go wrong if they found their purpose. Well, maybe I'd have to move to Zimbabwe and feed starving children who are dying of AIDS, right? Or maybe my wife wouldn't love me anymore. Or maybe my clients wouldn't want to hire me anymore. Or maybe I wouldn't be able to earn enough money. Or maybe people would think I was nuts or something. Or maybe would ask too much of me and I wouldn't be able to do it. And then I'd feel like a failure, right? There's all these scenarios that come up in people's minds when they imagine actually knowing and living their purpose. And those are all disincentives to listening to the answer to the question. It creates static and noise in the brain, right? It triggers the amygdala, the part of the brain that's like, you know, fight, flight, freeze. And so then now they're not present to hear the answer, even if the answer were available. So the first thing you have to do is calm down the brain. We have to create a scenario, conditions of safety for the person to be able to imagine hearing the answer and being completely fine and safe. And in order to do that, you have to address all of those fears one by one, right? And that's, again, something people just don't know how to do. So now we have the brain calm. Now we need a technique for communicating directly with something that's not conscious. And most people don't know how to do that either, right? So you have to teach them how to meditate and visualize, or how to journal in a way that creates a dialogue or something like that. And you have to get them clear on who or what they're asking the question of. And the answer to that is going to depend on their beliefs. So for most people, they can imagine that some part of them has some idea of what their purpose is, even if they consciously don't. Okay, what part is that? Is that your intuition? your gut, your heart, your soul, your higher self, your inner truth? What do you call it? How do you think of it? Okay, that's what you're going to ask. Or maybe they're religious and they want to ask God or the universe or Allah, Buddha, the Force or the Tao or something like that, right? Okay, that's fine. But it's got to be something that they believe could exist and could answer the question if they could talk to it. So you get them clear on who they're talking to, how they're communicating with it, what they're asking, right? Actually asking what is my purpose tends to produce kind of vague answers. So there are other more specific ways of going about it. And they have to be in a completely calm state while doing this. Well, you know, just like flying a plane or playing an instrument, that's a lot of stuff to make work all at once if you don't know how.
Totally.
But if you can create those conditions for psychologically healthy people who are actually curious about the question, about 90% of the time, they'll get a really powerful answer if you can create the conditions.
That's great. And I think it connects the learning and the purpose part, right? Like right. You are about to learn two things. I'm taking from some of the takeaways I'm taking from your explanation. Of course, you need the learning process to learn how to do this, these techniques,
right.
Or
that's right.
Go with the source, someone that actually knows how to do it, and
right.
maybe learn to do it yourself the next time. But whatever, the process of learning a method.
Right.
And also,
you learn the methodology first. Yep.
Exactly. And also the fear of learning or the struggle of self-awareness, right? Of self-learning,
yep.
Right?
That's
also something that it's very underestimated, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Because I myself being an experiment of feeling more comfortable with those kind of exercises, but I can imagine going back to the place where when you weren't that guy, right? You were mm-hmm. another person.
Yep.
It feels cheesy. It feels like, and maybe it
feels awkward. It feels uncomfortable.
Exactly.
It might feel fake.
Yeah. And maybe you have bad experiences doing it before for whatever reason. But it's just avoiding the work, right? I mean, you want to fly a plane, you need to train and plane
right.
hours.
Right? And some of the stuff is awkward when you're flying the plane. You have to look at the instruments and not follow your intuition. You have to say,
exactly.
Okay, my body wants to go this way, but the instruments are saying I should go that way. You know, so you have to unlearn certain stuff in order to get the right habits to be able to do it.
And I don't know how often you need to do this. I mean, does it changes or
it does. It seems to evolve, and so you have to revisit the purpose every couple of years. Is what we found. Once it's gone 4, 5, 6 years, it tends to lose its potency and you have to update it. Like, so what we recommend with people after they find their purpose is we say, okay, every year, check it, see if it's still strong and true and accurate. And if it's not, update it, create new wording or a new version that's got the juice again, that's inspiring and compelling and powerful for you. And after having been through the process, they know how to do that. So,
yeah, it's great. I think it's great that we are saying it as it is, like for people to know that it's like going to the gym. If you stop going to the gym, you're going to lose the muscle, right? So,
yeah,
let's just say it as it is. You need to work on these quite a few times during your life, and you need to do the work. And going back to organizations, I would mm-hmm. like to have to spend some minutes talking about leadership and purpose. Why
yeah.
it is important? And I'm pretty sure you are also hire and search for a lot of leadership programs and stuff about leadership in organizations. It's
yeah.
also very trendy. Leadership, purposeful leadership, conscious
That's right.
leadership. So let's talk about. Give me your
yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's a couple different pieces there. So as a leader, if I'm like a CEO or, you know, an executive director of a nonprofit or something like that, if I'm clear on my own purpose, it will make me a better leader. I'll make clearer decisions. I'll be more inspired by what I'm doing, and others will be more inspired when they follow me. even if I never tell them the purpose. It's actually better if I do, but I don't have to. I get a lot of the benefits, even just from knowing my purpose and acting on it as a leader, will tend to create that effect in other people. And they've measured this, and actually it's cross-cultural, right? Doesn't matter which part of the world someone is from or which society they grew up in, everybody wants to follow an inspiring, purposeful, charismatic leader who knows where he or she is going, right? So that's one piece of it. It just makes you easier to follow. The other thing is that being purposeful affects your mood and your tone and how you perceive the work you're doing. And generally speaking, other people who follow you aren't going to be more inspired and more committed to what you're doing than you are. So you're gonna tend to set a ceiling, not entirely, but for the most part, most people aren't gonna exceed your commitment and your inspiration. So if your commitment and your inspiration are very high, that leaves a lot of room for people to be very committed and very inspired. If they're low, it doesn't leave much room. So the state that following your purpose puts you in is important.
That's a very critical insight. I mean, I have heard before on talking about when you are the CEO or the owner of a company that you, I think, I don't remember who was it, but mm-hmm. you cannot expect people to think of the company as you think of it. I mean, it's unfair because it's your company. You are the owner. Right. But in this case, you cannot expect people to be more inspired than you are in your team. And it's more mm-hmm. or less the analogy works, but it's hard to swallow and it's important to understand it.
Yep. But the other thing is actually you can, well, let's come back to that ownership question because there is something you can do about that. The other thing has to do with strategy and decision-making, which is traditional business decision-making depends on predicting the future accurately. So if you think about a traditional strategic plan, it's like, well, we're here now and we want to be in this other place in 5 years, and therefore we're going to do this and this and this and this and hit all these milestones to get there. Well, that plan to be that other place in 5 years assumes a world around that in which being there makes sense. Well, okay, but what if your entire industry disappears overnight, right? Or, I mean, so it's things have become so chaotic and so uncertain and evolve so rapidly that kind of long-term planning is questionable in value and accuracy. And so there've been, you know, leadership institutes and stuff that have been doing studies on this and saying, well, what then does a leader do? How do you chart your way through the mess if you can't predict the future? What do you do? And it turns out purpose is one of the best answers to that anyone's been able to find, which is to say, if I'm following my purpose, if we're following our purpose at any given, you know, juncture in the road where we have to decide to go left and right, the purpose is going to give us an answer to that question that doesn't depend on knowing the future. And will tend to work in our favor over time. And that, so it's a very powerful navigational tool when everyone around you is confused.
That's great. And I'm pretty sure you have the there are a lot of studies about this. That there's going to be payback on following your purpose more often than not, right?
And that's right. Yeah, there's a big effect on the bottom line over time from following a purpose for individuals and for organizations. Individuals, purpose-driven individuals, earn more money over their lifetime than people who aren't.
Great.
And organizations that are purpose-driven outperform competitors in their industries 12 to 1.
Yes, and I think I have read this in a couple of different books, and I remember the Infinite Game from Simon mm-hmm. Sinek. He has done a lot of good work to put the purpose word mm-hmm. out there.
Yep.
But yes, I like it. I really liked about the having it as a navigation tool. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. So how does the future of leadership look like? Talking about predicting the future. Well,
yeah.
How does this connect on we love to know Yep. So how we should prepare our leaders for the future. So what would you say to that?
So what's happening is, because the environment is becoming so chaotic, let me just say a little bit, what's happened to leadership over the last 50 years or so is the term leader has been growing in terms of what it means and what's expected of a leader in an organization. So originally it was that you were telling people what to do. Like that's what it meant, you know, and that's kind of changed. It's like, well, ordering people around all the time isn't really the best style of leadership. You have to kind of develop some other style of leadership that's not quite so controlling, you know, and you have to inspire them too and engage them. And you have to help them grow and develop, right? You got to do career development for people who work for you. You'll have to facilitate and lead meetings. You have to be good at strategy, have to be able to manage profit and loss for your division, have to be good at hiring and firing and downsizing. And just the list gets longer and longer and longer of all the different things the leader is supposed to be able to do because they're a leader. And like you said before, that doesn't mean that we're actually going to train them in doing any of that. We're just going to expect them to do it, right? So it's actually become really unrealistic to be successful at all those things. Now, to make matters worse, there's a whole new bunch of expectations showing up now. Now leaders are supposed to be good at masculine and feminine stuff, right? They're supposed to have high emotional intelligence and be able to exhibit empathy. They are supposed to be intuitive, right? Because you can't predict the future, so you need good intuition in order to make good decisions. You have to be authentic. That was another one some of these leadership institutes came up with as a key tool for leaders of the future, is authenticity. And you have to know your own purpose, and you have to be able to lead in a purpose-driven way, and you have to be able to have values and live according to it. So it's just, it's got
to be.
Oh my God.
Extraterrestrial.
And then you have to walk on water and be able to raise.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's gotten really, really difficult. The part of what is changing and what is going to change is that all of this stuff is rooted in the assumption that organizations are organized as hierarchies. That's how the org chart looks like. And that's why so much expectation gets piled onto this one person, is because whether it's a whole company or a division or even just a team, that all this expectation gets piled on them because they're the one at the top of that little pyramid, or sometimes the very large pyramid, right? And so then all this expectation gets piled on them. One of the things that's changing is that organizations, some of them, aren't organizing themselves hierarchically anymore. They're using other systems like sociocracy and holacracy in the collaborative operating system, or creating their own system that's non-hierarchical. And now you're not putting all this expectation on one person, you're distributing it. And now it becomes easier to fulfill those expectations because you're not singularly expected to be able to do all of that stuff yourself. Now, part of what's happening to leadership is leaders have to become skilled at collaborating with and influencing people that they can't control. And this is the key thing that I think is going to become a characteristic of leaders of the future, is that there's going to be less and less stuff that you can control and more stuff that you have to be able to influence. So your collaborative and influence skills are going to become of paramount importance.
So yeah, and it connected with I think you mentioned something about it's easier to lead when you have your purpose right. It's easy to influence.
Easier to influence people, easier to get them to follow you, easier to get them to care, even though you can't control them.
I like that. Yeah, and we talk a lot about holacracy for sure with Brian.
Yep.
And I feel, I've been reading about it for quite a while. It's like, I was about to say, it's all around us, but it is not. It happens that you read a lot about that and you heard a lot about some companies, but at least in Latin America, I think that's one of the things that we are also lagging behind in actually implementing these kind of management techniques. But the ones that are doing it, well, are taking the biggest part of the cake, right? So I agree on that. It's happening. This pandemic helped a lot on that, to see that you need to
When the people are all at home, you can't control them in quite the same way. And now you're much more in influence and indirect and this sort of thing, and measuring the result rather than the amount of time that they took to create that result.
Right? Agreed. Okay, so maybe one final question about purpose. A couple of them. Mm-hmm. Maybe you already answered this, but if not, you can be more, if you want to be more clear or on point. So what's the main obstacle for learning, for organizations to become purposeful organizations?
So there's a couple things. So one is, as we talked before, is not knowing how. There's a lot of organizations that have read the studies, gone to conferences, read the books, and they're like, wow, this is great. How do we do it? And like I said, they got in the boardroom and they sat there and they tried to get a purpose statement. They came up with garbage. They're like, okay, that's not it. And they're expecting themselves to be able to play the violin or fly the plane.
That's another bias, the self-confidence bias, the overconfidence bias, to think that you know something that you don't.
Huge obstacle. That's obstacle number one. Obstacle number two is fear. And that's like, okay, but if we do find this higher purpose, do this, what will it do to the company? And will that be good? And just like for an individual, the scenarios that people imagine of what might go wrong if they do that, stop them in their tracks. And now they can't access their creative and intuitive capacity because they're in a state of fear, right? The amygdala just shuts off the cerebral cortex when you get enough tension going in your system, right? And now you can't think strategically or creatively or innovatively. So that's the other. And then the other interesting one is there's this funny little dynamic around control, which is stronger when we're talking about self-organization, but it comes up around purpose too, which is if I'm the leader, that thing you said before about no one is going to love the company more than me. No one's going to feel more ownership of the company than I am, right? I'm going to be the one who's most attached to it. On the one hand, that's lonely because the leader's like, well, how come they don't care as much as I do? But on the other hand, it's also kind of comforting, right? If it's all me and mine. And finding the purpose does an interesting thing, which is it allows people to have a direct relationship with the organization that doesn't go through you. If there is no purpose identified, then by default, you get to set the purpose of the company. And you get to change it tomorrow or the next day or the next day. Whatever you say is what we're doing and why we're doing it, that's the answer because you're the CEO. But if we together find a purpose that everyone feels attached to and feels is important and they feel inspired by and they feel ownership of it because they participated in creating it, now we all have our own independent relationship to the purpose. And so the people's relationship to the company doesn't necessarily have to pass through me, which will create all kinds of performance benefit. But I might worry about not being in complete control in quite the same way anymore.
I want to choose one of those three elements to dig a little bit deeper. So the element of fear, how can you avoid that in a conversation with the suicide?
So you can't avoid it. You have to address it. You have to come up the person says, oh, geez, what if our customers hate our purpose, right? The fear is phrased in a way as a question, like, oh no,
what will we do?
If blah 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 happens, right? And what winds up being the case is you have to answer the question. Say, well, great, okay. So if your customers don't love your purpose, then what, right? So I mean, you have to. I'm oversimplifying a bit here, but you have to come up with a response to each of those fears, because if they're left unresponded to, then the fear will drive and you won't find a purpose and you won't be able to implement.
All right. Yeah, you need to head on into it.
Yeah. All right. You can't just do it. You can't ignore the fear and go ahead anyway. In this process, that does not work.
All right. And can you share some examples of companies that you have seen doing it great that we can maybe inspire ourselves to go and look for them in the world of the internet?
Yeah. So I'm hampered somewhat by the fact that these companies find very inspiring, compelling purposes and then don't necessarily want me to name the company by name. So I can give examples, but okay. Some of them by name and some of them not. One example you're familiar with is Holacracy. So Brian Robertson, I helped him find his personal purpose in life, and I helped Holacracy find its. And the part of that purpose they use publicly is to transform humanity's relationship to power. That's what they're trying to do. So Holacracy, the methodology for organizing companies, the real reason for it isn't just because it works better, that's true, than hierarchy in many situations. That's not the only reason. From a purpose standpoint, the reason the company wants people to adopt Holacracy, whether they pay Holacracy money or not, Holacracy won the company money or not, is because people operating in a company that's using Holacracy transform in how they think about power. And the organization does as well. It's a completely different relationship to power than a hierarchy. In a hierarchy, in order to join the organization, I have to give you my power. To join a Holacracy organization, I do not. In fact, I have to take more power to function correctly in a holocratic organization. So there's
one very good example. Yeah. in a lot of ways, yes.
Yep. Other examples, a South American company. It was a consulting company. Can't name it. But they, let's see, what can I say about their purpose? Their purpose is interesting. It's all about love. We are love in motion. It was all in Spanish, but I remember it in English. Their purpose is to give love and freedom to the hearts of the world or something like that. It's really poetic. It's interesting, they work at the highest levels of business and government, and they found that purpose right before the global financial crisis back in 2008 or whenever that was. And that was their best year financially ever, while everything was melting down. And they're one of the few companies I know that have made an individual purpose mandatory for working there. And it's worked really well for them.
Oh, that's good.
And they're like transforming the whole educational system in their country and working with top politicians.
That is a good thing. You hear a lot about connect with the purpose of the company. Connect your own purpose with the purpose of the company. Is that something
right.
that you recommend? Or
absolutely, that, yeah. And so how? Most companies don't want to make individual purpose mandatory because that's kind of, you know, there are some cases where that makes sense, but most cases it doesn't. But helping individual employees find their purpose has a huge benefit to engagement and profit all its own, separate from finding the company's purpose or the leader's purposes.
Just so you by can itself.
That's right. So you can do all three. You help employees find their purpose, you help the leaders find their purpose, you help the company find its purpose. And ideally, here's where you get the real, real, real performance benefit. If I work at this company, I know my own purpose. I know the company's purpose. And I can see a connection between my purpose and the company's purpose and my job, my role. If I can connect those three things, it unleashes just unbelievable amounts of motivation in people. And that's where we see these really big spikes in financial spikes, like this one South American company or an Israeli startup that had relatively flat revenues for 8 years, found their purpose. And about half of their employees' purposes. And then in the next 3 years had 1,200% growth.
Wow. So a basic recommendation for a leader or an individual is dig deep into what your purpose is and find a way to connect it with your companies. So do the work.
That's right. So if you're a leader, ideally, you should understand your own purpose if you want to play this game, right? This is a particular strategy for unleashing really powerful results, okay? So you learn your own purpose, you help the company find its purpose, and then you're trying to do two things. One is you're helping the company to achieve its purpose, and the other is you're using the company as a tool to manifest your purpose.
Okay.
And then if you really want the best results, you help everybody else in the company do the same thing. So everyone who works there is helping the company achieve its purpose and using the company as a tool for manifesting their own purpose in life.
I like it. I like it. And there's methodology behind that, of course, for right. sure. There has to be a way to do it methodologically. So hopefully you guys, everyone listening, will go and check out Tim's webpage and book. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to ask him to tell me more about this offline. So we'll do that. let's go to the final round of questions, the quick rapid fire ones.
Lightning round.
Exactly. Let's do that. And it's about learning, Tim.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So how do you learn? What are your learning techniques to actually being on top of things?
Yeah. So I'm a conceptual learner. So this is why, like, I need a framework. I need to know why I'm learning something, and I need to be able to comprehend the framework. And if I can get the framework, I can remember it for decades. If I can't, I'll remember it until, you know, the end of the conversation or the next day or the end of the class or whatever, and then it goes away. So it depends on the teacher. Sometimes that's annoying because I ask all these questions to get and then I'm good.
So. All right. Got it. Very good. And you're very connected to what it's clear to you that is not so clear to other ones. And what's going on in your life? What's next for you?
For me is solving intractable social problems. My purpose is asking me to look at big international issues, you know, so peace in the Middle East, slavery, stuff like that.
All right, all right. Keep us posted on where are you or what are you doing. It would be great. And I mean, I want to jump into that. Like, it's because your purpose was refined lately, or what happened?
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I was really an exploration of what's the best way to manifest my purpose. So a way of saying it, my mission is to reveal and create heaven on earth. Would be a simple way of saying it. So it's really it's about transforming human society into a new paradigm that's way better than anything we can imagine. Right. And which is very different than trying to solve individual problems. It's like, no. We can do way better than this. Way better.
All right.
Yeah.
Good. Great. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And some resources do you want to recommend? Of course, please.
Book True Purpose. Classic in the field. Yeah.
Yeah. In any sense. I mean, books, podcasts, yep. Please tell us where we can find you, where we can
find so you can find me. So there's some good resources. If you go to, I think it's thegatheringcall.com or something like that. There's a monthly live community call led by the True Purpose Institute. That I founded, where we invite folks on to come and talk about methods for changing the world and how people are changing the world and stuff like that. Nice. We also offer courses through the Shift Network. For me personally, if people want to learn more about me, that would be newparadigmgloballeader.com. There's other good resources out there. Holacracy, for folks who are like consultants and into working with organizations, Holacracy is a great resource. Conscious Capitalism is a great resource. They're big proponents of purpose. Something called the Collaborative Operating System, which is at thecos.org. Another really interesting self-organizing system that most people don't know about.
Never heard of it. That's good.
I really love self-organizing systems. And interestingly, they pretty much all require you to have a purpose. As far as I know, hierarchy is the only organizational system that doesn't require a higher purpose.
what an irony. What an irony. We are living through it right now. And yes, I heard about these guys,
conscious capitalism, those guys.
No, the other. When you said the operating system, I remember about
collaborative operating system. Yeah.
Another. My mind is blocked, but I will. There's another operating system that is the
Well, there's one called the Entrepreneurial Operating System that you may be thinking of, but it's that one's not actually a self-organizing system. It's something that operates inside of a hierarchy.
Yeah,
but it's also I've heard people say very good things about it.
So. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure there's a lot of frameworks we can take from there to start doing our work. And I just can't remember the name of this one, but I will let you know later in an email or something. But
cool.
You probably know about it. All right. Mm-hmm. So, team, we are wrapping up. Any final remarks?
Yeah, if you want to make a big difference in the world, if you want to live a more fulfilling, happier, longer life, go find your purpose. But don't expect that you're just going to know the answer because you asked the question. Get help.
Agreed. Very good. So thank you very much. Thank you for your time. And thank you everyone listening to us. I hope you find us insightful as I did. And well, as always, guys, dare to learn. See you soon.
Keep learning.
Muchas gracias por acompañarnos en un episodio más del Dare to Learn podcast. Estoy seguro que como yo, debes haber encontrado muchísima sabiduría, muchísimos insights y cosas súper interesantes que nos compartió nuestro invitado. Te quiero pedir un favor. Para que seamos más la comunidad de Learning Explorers, para que seamos más los que estamos en ese camino del aprendizaje infinito, comparte lo que hayas aprendido. Ayúdanos a que esto le llegue a más personas. Compártelo con alguien a quien le pueda servir. Compártelo en tus redes, compártelo en las nuestras. Coméntanos. Nos encantará saber qué es lo que estás aprendiendo de estos episodios y poder tener una conversación ahí contigo. Eso es lo que hace que esto gane tracción y que cada vez seamos más los convencidos del poder del aprendizaje, los que no dejamos de aprender todo el tiempo. Te pido que nos des un like, un review en las redes o directamente donde escuches tus podcasts. En Instagram nos encuentras como Dare to Learn MX y en el resto de las redes como Dare to Learn. A mí particularmente, si hay algo que quisieras decirme, estoy como diego@daretolearn.com.mx. Me puedes mandar un correo o escríbenos a podcast@daretolearn.com.mx. Nos va a encantar saber de ti y tener una conversación directamente. Muchísimas gracias, como siempre, por atreverte a aprender y nos vemos.